Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Megan Rosenbloom. She is a librarian with a research interest in the history of medicine and rare books. She is the Collections Strategies Librarian at the UCLA Library in Los Angeles. We're talking about her book, Dark Archives, A Librarian's Investigation into the Science and History of Books Bound in Human Skin. Megan, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having me, Mark.
I don't know what I expected when I picked up this book. I hoped it was going to be interesting, and it really is. It's not sensational, although the very subject matter, you can't avoid it being sensational. But this is a serious book. How did you get interested in anthropodermic books? That's the title. That's the term.
Books bound in human skin, yes. Anthropodermic. Anthro being human and dermic being skin. How did I get interested? It just kind of was a strange, slippery slope of a lot of disparate interests I have. I don't think anyone sets out like, I'm going to be the human skin book lady. Know everything about human skin books. This is not
No, your high school guidance counselor is not going to be checking that off.
Right.
No, okay.
That's not the color of anyone's parachute or whatever. It was really just, I was a journalist first. I went to journalism school, and I was at some point I did an interview, a long recorded piece about librarians in the Patriot Act, and interviewing librarians. I was thinking, I think librarians are my people. This seems like a field of people that I feel like we have similar interests, because librarians and journalists, there are obvious differences, but the idea of taking a huge world of information and then, trying to deliver information and learning new things every day and giving people what they need in terms of the information, distilling it down and, disseminating it. That was something that I felt like that was really important to me. And so I decided to go to library school, and I was really interested in rare books particularly. But at the time, which was around, 2008, I graduated from library school. I was doing the program online. It was an early online program, so they didn't really have a way to learn about rare books. But I was being a docent at a rare book museum and, just kind of learning about them. And so one day I was walking from the place I was docenting, being a docent to the Mütter Museum, where I would go occasionally. The Mütter Museum in Philadelphia is this world-class medical pathology kind of oddities museum, 19th century museum. And they have, just unbelievable things like, I think it's a 6 foot or 8 foot long human colon, for instance. And, this beautiful room full of all different body parts of unusual presentations. And so I was walking around, and I saw this little case with some not very attractive looking, pretty plain Jane books with their covers closed, thinking, the books obviously draw my attention right away because I'm a book person. And then I'm like, why are the covers closed? It don't really look like much. And then I saw that there was a description there that said that they were bound in human skin and that they were made by doctors in the 19th century. And I was just so shocked. I really actually remember looking around, like, is anyone seeing this? Even though there are, giant skeletons and all sorts of, people with horns growing out of their heads. But I was very intrigued and disturbed by these very commonplace little books. But I also thought that they were kind of, like so many other things, maybe they were just a Mütter thing, right? Maybe this is just one of those weird things that the Mütter has and no one else has. But as I went through library school and started, doing research, I would ask around. And then I heard more and more about stories about, I think we have one here. Or the campus tour guides used to say we had one, but I don't think they're right, or, well, there's one that has a note in it that says it's bound in human skin, but, you know, I don't really think that's real. And I was just kind of struck by how many there were and that there was no real agreed upon, you know, opinion about, yes, this happened, this is why it happened, these are real, these are not real. And right around that time, then there was this big news in library land where Harvard had done scientific testing, to discover whether their three alleged human skin books were actually human skin, and two of them were not, and one was. And then that set off, like, a big, you know.
You talk about that in the book. And this is one of the great sort of discussions that occurs throughout different sections of your book. The morality of having a human skin-bound book in a collection. There were people who said, no, and you would have to, you know, give it a decent burial or something like that. And you came down on the side that they can be important in a human in a library collection or a rare book collection, because they teach us things. And among the things that you brought out is it really illuminates, in some cases, how doctors thought about their patients.
Right. So
I found that, and we're going to talk about one case of that in a bit. But it is really controversial. I mean, there were people who were talking about Hannibal Lecter in the Harvard Library, and that it was, like, really grotesque and gruesome. But it did happen. And before we get any further and going down that path, I want to talk about the Anthropodermic Book Project, which you're involved in. What are they trying to do?
All right. So that first chemist who did those tests at Harvard, I went to interview him to learn more about, you know, the test, and we got to talking and comparing notes about other books that we had, you know, heard about, and we thought it would be, you know, instructive to try to test as many as we could in these public collections to find out if they were real. Not only because we found one that was, he had tested one that was definitely real, so we knew there was at least one, but also because there were two that were fake, right?
Yeah.
And so the fakes and the, you know, whether it's fake or real, it's very interesting. How did these, you know, ideas, how did this idea of it being bound in human skin get applied to a certain object? And how has that object been treated over the years with this claim on it? And then for the first time, you know, in 2014, 2015, pretty recently, we had a way of really knowing the truth. So the ability to actually know something that has not been known for hundreds of years about an object, that was so fascinating to me.
Yeah.
So we kind of decided to join forces in a very sort of ad hoc way, let's keep in touch, let's do this. And he was already talking with the Mütter Museum curator, Anna Doty, about their books. And then, we all kind of started working together, and another heritage science chemist got together. So we set out with the idea, let's try to find as many of these, like, physical books that exist in public library or museum collections. Meaning not, oh, I heard there was a book here, but this book has a title, this book is this specific, you know, copy at this specific place. And so let's find as many of those as we can and then see how many we can get tested. So the Anthropodermic Book Project, that's what we do.
Now, the process of testing the book actually requires you to take a sample. Now, it's a teeny sample, but you still have to take a sample from the alleged skin. And then you test it with, I love this, MALDI-V, matrix-assisted laser desorption ionization plate. Thank God for MALDI. And then you can tell. You can tell it's a human skin. Can you also tell if it's another, specifically like if it's deer or sheep or rabbit?
Yeah, so the test that we use is known as peptide mass fingerprinting. It's a fairly straightforward, you know, proteomics test. So proteomics means what we're testing is the protein in the leather, not DNA or anything like that, because DNA often gets degraded not only over time, but when it goes through a big chemical change, like leather tanning process is very destructive for DNA. But your protein lasts for thousands of years pretty undisturbed. And so it's the collagen is the kind of protein you find in skin. And you digest this teeny tiny little piece of leather in an enzyme, and then you run it through the machine, and the machine matches against a library of known samples from other animals. And what comes out looks sort of like a line graph, and the line graph shows you, matches with another animal to say this is a sheep or a cow or a pig or whatever. And the thing that, it took, because I'm not a scientist, it took me a little while to wrap my head around it. But they're in different animal families. The different species diverge further back in evolutionary times. And so, like, at different times in evolutionary time. So the great apes family, of which humans are a part, we're so close in evolutionary time to other great apes that we all have the same protein markers.
That's right. Yeah.
So the closest we can get to when we test a alleged human skin book, if it shows up as a great ape family, then we are, that plus the provenance says, yes, this is a human and not like a chimpanzee or something like that. The other animals that are routinely used for leather, like your sheep and goat and cows, they're all from the same animal family, but they diverged far enough back in evolutionary time that one of their protein markers have changed. So we're actually able to get closer down to, okay, that's a sheep or that's a goat.
What was the most unusual material other than human? What was that you found that these books were bound in saying that they were human?
Oh, that's a great question. I think in terms of actually, we think this is human, one of the books that is has a French Revolutionary provenance, that was at UC Berkeley, turned out to be bound in horse leather.
Now, I want to mention that there are a number of cases of books that you tested that turned out not to be human, but there are definitely human-bound books. And this is going to sound like a weird question, but is there like a golden age of, anthropodermic bibliopagy? I mean, is there a time period where, like, it was more common? They're not doing it now, right? So there's no, you didn't test any 20th century ones, did you?
Right. I can't rule out that no one out there got this idea somewhere.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's the tenor of the times. Yeah. As we speak, there are people making plans.
Yeah. Yeah. But they have not really come across my transom in that way. But the general time period where it was most active would be from the mid 19th century to around the end of the 19th century. Those are the ones we find most often. Sometimes it can be kind of hard because, when most people think of books today, you think, okay, here's this physical object. It is all together as one piece, right? And so if the inside text says it's from X year, then are like, okay, that book was made in this time period. But with older books from the handmade era, you may have a text block that's from 1661, but it was rebound in the 19th century, so that can be kind of confusing for a lot of folks and for me, because I was not a historical binding expert or anything when I started doing this work, and I'm still trying to learn how to tell, okay, that's definitely a 17th century French binding versus this or that,
One of the interesting things that you end up pointing out throughout the book is the relationship of what book was bound with human skin is important. Everybody I'm sure listening is like sort of putting the brakes on at human skin bound book, but it's the book itself and why that choice was made. And I want to talk about one specific example, which I found really interesting, what you did with this. And then that was the story of the Irish widow Mary Lynch in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
I found that story fascinating. And it was Dr. John Stockton Huff, who was a pathologist.
Yeah, so Dr. Huff was... he had sort of a professional interest in parasites, like trichinosis parasites, but he was also a sort of early male obstetrician, you know, doing women's health and baby delivering at the time when men were really just starting to do that professionally and it wasn't so much midwives anymore. And so he was doing an autopsy of Mary Lynch at a hospital in Philadelphia, and she had died of a tuberculosis-related disease. I always have trouble saying it. It's like the hardest thing to say. It's like phthisis or something. P-H-T-H. It's really hard to say, but basically tuberculosis. And when he was doing her autopsy, he found a lot of these, you know, little worms basically in her lungs, like millions of them. It's pretty disgusting. And then it was kind of one of the first time he was able to find evidence that trichinosis could be passed from eating bad pork into human, right? And so it was this woman's body that he had taken pieces of skin off of her and then had them, you know, preserved, and then some 20 years later used them to bind three of his favorite old books that had to do with, you know, women's health, basically. So things like Speculations on the Mode and Appearance of Impregnation in the Human Female, that was from, you know, the late 18th century, or, you know, a book from a famous 17th century French midwife about, you know, it wasn't her childbearing book. It was like another book. But anyway, you know, all appears to us as extremely strange choices, right?
Well, I mean, and do we have any insight into what he was actually thinking? And was he like thinking he was memorializing her by using her skin to bound a book?
Yeah, so we have more of an insight into Huff's motivations than from some of the other doctors.
He was a hardcore bibliophile.
Yes, yeah. He's a hardcore bibliophile, and he wrote a lot of notes inside of these books in ways that, you know, a lot of the other folks didn't. And sometimes the notes inside just say bound in human skin, but you don't know if it was the person who owned it or someone else along the line who wrote that in there, you know. But he would say bound in the skin from Mary L. at this hospital at this time. You know, he added a lot of bits into it. So it's the thing that really strains credulity from today's perspective is how, you know, is this guy a, you know, serial killer, you know, doctor kind of guy, you know, who would do something like this? But it really kind of tells us a lot about the way that clinical medicine developed over time.
Oh, yeah.
And all of these, you know, the norms of the time and how something like this could have ever been, you know, seen as okay. Because this guy was a totally well-respected doctor in his community. There were many other doctors who also did this. So it wasn't just this one, or it wasn't one or two freaky people doing it. I wouldn't say it was very commonplace, but it wasn't something where if your colleagues heard about it, they would get you kicked out of the American Medical Association or something like that. And I think the reason why is because, yeah, the clinical medicine, like the idea of learning about patients at the bedside and learning about them by opening cadavers and doing all this, you know, making medicine more scientific and seeing a lot more patients had this, you know, maybe unforeseen side effect that the more and more people you were seeing and, you know, the more and more minute ways that you're studying their bodies, the more abstract the humanity of those people became.
Yeah.
And then when doctors are raising in social, you know, they're climbing in social status and starting to do gentlemanly things like collecting art and rare books, you know, they had access to this most unusual finding material that no one else had because they did dissections. And so they were able to make these very unusual, rare, and, you know, in a way, kind of more interesting from a collector perspective, books. Yeah, it's really hard, you know, like for us today to imagine this, but this is also from a time where the idea of consent around your dead body wasn't really something that was talked about.
That's
or
right.
People had any sort
right.
of concept for. And so I think that these books, you know, as gruesome as they are, tell us, you know, a lot about, you know, the ways, like some of the side effects of that, what Foucault called the clinical gaze, the way that doctors look at patients. Like, what happens if you let that tendency, that dehumanizing, kind of objectifying tendency go too far? If you don't keep it in check, like, what's the worst that can happen? This is an example of what's the worst.
A lot of surgeons today are accused of having that gaze. You're mm-hmm. listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Megan Rosenblum. She's a librarian with research interest in the history of medicine and rare books. She's the collection strategies librarian at the UCLA Library in Los Angeles. And she's written a book that we're talking about, Dark Archives, A Librarian's Investigation into the Science and History of Books Bound in Human Skin. Megan, there was an interesting example. I think it was from the Mutter, but I may be wrong. There was a sample of parchment that was said to be the skin of a white man scalped and skinned alive by Native Americans. And that it wasn't genuine, but it tells a whole story about another reason that these kinds of materials may exist, and it's a racist one.
Right. So those that particular sample was from the Huntingdon Library, which
right.
is out here in San Marino, and just about the prettiest place you'll ever go. The gardens are absolutely amazing, let alone all the amazing stuff they have. But the Huntingdon had us, my team, test two of their objects, and one was a medical book that was allegedly bound in human skin, and it turned out to be real. And then there was this other, completely other object. It wasn't even a book, but it was a piece of parchment that alleged that it was, you know, written on, it was basically a cry for help from someone who had been, you know, taken captive by Native Americans during the Revolutionary War, and said they were writing it on someone's skin, right? And then we tested that and it turned out to be a cow's hide. But then you think, okay, what is the motivation there
right.
behind
yeah.
why? And one of the trends that I noticed among the fake books, the books that say have some sort of claim to be bound in human skin but turn out not to be, you know, I do believe that probably a lot of these books that turn out not to be, you know, human, that maybe it wasn't someone trying to trick anyone. It's just that there was a story that went along with the book, and someone wrote in it at some point that to, you know, point it out, hey, this is that book that is bound in human skin, and they had no real way of knowing, right? So I do think that it's not necessarily for that all of these fake books were intent to deceive. But what I did notice is a strange common theme was that every book or object that we've been able to test that had some sort of mention of a race of a person anywhere in it, everyone we've tested turned out to be fake.
That's fascinating.
And so
that's really interesting.
So that's like, what is the motivation there? Why would that be? You know, I found that really interesting. So I have a whole chapter that deals with some of the racial elements of these books. But the general thing about them is that, you know, unless we find a book that says it was bound in the skin of a certain kind of person and we test it and we find it to be human, then you could reasonably believe the rest of the provenance story there, that it's also this kind of human. But the tests that we do, we cannot tell what, you know, how someone's race may have appeared, you know, in the world or something
right.
like that
exactly.
by it. If we were able to test DNA, we would be able to find out maybe biological sex of a person, but we also would not really be able to discern someone's race from that. So there is a big question about some of these books, and, you know, basically with current methods anyway, I don't think there's any way for us to know the, you know, who, what the racial makeup is. And one thing that people might find surprising is that human skin, when you, you know, tan it and everything, it looks the same regardless of what the skin, you know, would have looked like in life. And you can dye it any color, just like you can have any color of leather. So you can't look at it and say, oh, that's clearly a, you know, this kind of person or something like that.
We only have 1 minute left. And what was interesting to me is that there were several libraries that would not allow you to test their books.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, that's within their rights.
I understand it's within their rights, but it just sort of seems odd to me.
Yeah, I think some folks have, you know, they don't, maybe they don't want the attention regardless of what the outcome might be. Some places have extremely strict rules about sampling. So even if it's the teeny tiniest bit of sample, you can't take anything off of a book.
All right.
That I understand for sure.
But it's got to be frustrating. It's got to be frustrating.
It can be. Yeah, it can be, because there are certain books where I was just like, oh, I just really want to know about this one, because if we knew about this one, it might change the shape of the universe of what we know about these books so far. But, you know, so my bibliophilic book hunter heart wants what it wants, but that doesn't mean...
On that note, we'll end. My guest tonight has been Megan Rosenblum, librarian with research interest in the history of medicine and rare books. She is the collection strategies librarian at UCL Library in Los Angeles. And we're talking about a book. We haven't even begun to scratch the surface of the book. There's a great visit to a tannery to learn about how things are done. The Pergamena, I don't know how to pronounce that. That alone is worth an entire interview. But her book is Dark Archives, A Librarian's Investigation into the Science and History of Books Bound in Human Skin. Megan, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much, Mark.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.